Good day and welcome to the conference call on state preemption laws. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Molly Drankert. Please go ahead.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Again, my name is Molly Drankert, and I am the Public Affairs Director at the American Legislative Exchange Council. Today's call on preemption will first explore two laws that govern localities called the Home Rule and the Dillon Rule. And then our speakers will discuss trending local laws introduced around the country and how state preemption laws impact localities. We got two great speakers for you today. We have Councilman Sal DeCiccio. He is a first-generation Italian-American who was first elected to Phoenix City Council in 1994 and 1998. On February 10th in 2009, he was appointed by the mayor and Phoenix City Council to fill out the term of Councilman Greg Stanton. And in November of 2009, Sal was elected to a full term. So as a council member, he said his three main goals are job creation, improved public safety, and neighborhood preservation. We also have John Russell, who is a Culpeper, Virginia town councilman. John is also the director of the American City County Exchange. We call that ACE. And ACE is a three-year-old nonprofit association of local elected officials dedicated to accountability, transparency, efficiency, and effectiveness in local government. As a town councilman, John has dedicated his career to public service as an advocate for taxpayers. He has degrees in criminal justice and homeland security, and his passion is working with first responders to create public policy that meshes emerging technologies with protecting civil rights and privacy. Kind of a mouthful there, but you guys are going to see that our speakers are very, very qualified and excited to talk about this topic. If you've been following the news lately, you've probably been seeing what's going on. There's a lot of talk about preemption. So, again, before I turn the call over to our speakers, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who called in today, and especially to our media friends who called in. Everything is on the record, so you will have an opportunity to ask questions and get involved in the conversation as soon as John and Sal are finished speaking. So with that, John, again, Director of ACE and a Culpeper Town Councilman, I will turn the call over to you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate this opportunity to share with you a very important topic, which is state preemption of local governments. First, before we really dive into this, I want to kind of set out some terms that we need to be aware of. The first one is federalism. Federalism is rooted in the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, one thing that's very important to understand about the Constitution, that nowhere in the Constitution does it talk about a delegation of powers to cities and counties. The Constitution is silent on those political subdivisions. Another term that we need to know is local governments are known as political subdivisions. Usually in the law as they're set out for each state, those are referred to as political subdivisions. There are two types of legal definitions which govern political subdivisions throughout the 50 states. Those two legal definitions are called the Dillon Rule and Home Rule. The Dillon Rule comes from Justice John Dillon from the Iowa Supreme Court in the late 1800s. He said a municipal corporation possesses and can exercise the following powers and no others. First, those granted in express words from the state. Second, those necessarily implied or necessarily incident to the powers expressly granted. Third, those absolutely essential to the declared objects and purposes of the corporation, not simply convenient, but indispensable. And fourth, any fair doubt as to the existence of a power is resolved by the courts against the corporation. Being an elected official here in Virginia, Virginia really is the gold standard in regards to the Dillon Rule, and that's why you do not see preemption bills being passed through the House of Delegates, because we are very well defined on how we are to operate as political subdivisions. The other legal definition is Home Rule. In 1871, Judge Thomas Cooley challenged the Dillon Rule by holding that local governments possess some inherent rights, whether through constitutional or legislative changes made by the state. Home rule charters permit local governments to conservatively pass ordinances as they see fit, provided they abide by the state laws and constitutions. So even so, even just the difference between the Dillon Rule and the Home Rule, the fact still remains that both the Dillon Rule and Home Rule are creations of the state. Local powers can be given, and powers can be taken away or amended by the states. So it begs the question, if the states have the ultimate authority of their political subdivisions, why is there so much media or special interest anguish against the states who exercise their prerogative to preempt local governments? I would submit that the anguish being discussed in today's public discourse has little to do with reality and has more to do with the law, and most of all, this has everything to do with politics. In the last 6 years, we have seen an uptick in the number of local governments banning fracking, banning plastic bags, banning drones, overregulating Uber, mandating minimum wage increases, because these are issues typically handled by the state. We have seen a great number of state preemption bills becoming law. The state evokes preemption to have economic continuity throughout their political subdivisions. It is their prerogative. The uptick in the number of local bans and mandates are a result of, in by and large, of special interest groups who have lost power in the state houses and have devised new tactics to raise money for their organizations. We've seen this worked over and over again throughout the country. What will happen is these special interest groups will go into a locality, they'll organize student groups and community groups around a particular issue. Then they will bring in their experts that see things from their perspective to scare the community into action. And third, they apply pressure to local councils and commissions to submit to the public outcry the special interest group has created. These tactics are legal. These tactics have been replicated across the country by special interest groups like the Sierra Club, Surf Riders Foundation, and labor unions. The bottom line is, though, these trends on local bans, regulations, and mandates do not start organically with the constituents, but are manufactured to create a bottom-up pressure on state legislatures and, more importantly, as fundraising tools for these special interest groups. So as we proceed through this conversation, one of the things that we need to focus on, I believe, as local officials are the things that the state has told us that they want us to do. You know, the state is not going to oversee hundreds of thousands of individual police forces. They delegate those powers to the city to take care of. They're not going to oversee the intimate work of the infrastructure that's put into the cities and counties. Those are things they delegate to the cities. And so as we talk about preemption, I think it's important to understand that the state does give us some powers for local government to make sure that we're providing services to our constituents. And it's important for us as local officials to focus on those things that the state has given us and to do them well. So with that, I'm going to hand it over for some more commentary to Sal to take it from here.
Well, and thank you, John. I really appreciate it. John, I think you clearly put out exactly what the real issue is here. And if you look at it, and I hate using the word preemption because it's not a preemption. If you look at the 10th Amendment, if you look at the Dillon Rule, it literally says that whatever the state ends up coming up with their rule is the rules that the cities are going to be mandated by or that they can and cannot do. Yeah, if you look at it, I'd rather call it more along the lines of uniformity. You know, the state is mandated to look for uniform laws across the board. And if you look at it, and if every city were able to do what they want to do and completely control the economic environment, control everything around it, and you will end up having a variety of laws in every city. So the minute you cross the street, you come under a new set of laws. And the whole idea behind uniformity is to be able to bring the uniform laws across so that you can conduct commerce, that you can literally live your life. And to just give you an example, so you may have a McDonald's or let's say a Circle K because they use plastic bags. You have a Circle K on one side of the street, and then on the other side of the street, they come under a whole new set of laws, a different set of laws and taxation and different requirements. It becomes unwielding at that point. And the minute it does that, it starts becoming a restriction. And those restrictions end up costing consumers a considerable amount of time and money. You know, it was at the point where in Arizona, because we don't have those clearly defined areas of what is local and what is state mandated or state controlled, we run into the problem. And that's why the state of Arizona is always continually running into this issue, is because we don't have clearly defined lines of what cities can and cannot do, what the state delegates down to the city. And business owners, for an incredible period of time there, were having to carry multiple sets of books. Every city that they operated in, they would have to carry a new set of books for those cities. So if you really look at where we're at with this, if you really want to, you know, find ways to make things work, whether you're a citizen or you're a business owner or even part of the government, you've got to have uniform laws. You've got to have uniform requirements. Some of the things that John talked about here would a deal bring, let's take the minimum wage. Cities across, you see this across, it happened in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and other places, where they started mandating that, you know, everybody pay this $15 wage. Whether you agree with it or not, it's whether or not cities should be able to do those things. I say that they should not. There are certain functions that cities can do. For instance, I don't think that the state wants to get involved. They, of course, should be involved in police matters. That's something that they can do. But what the state does do is mandate the type of criminal laws that the police can enforce, so that if you're in one city, you're not going to be under a whole new set of criminal laws if you just cross the street. So you have the individuals that provide the service are the ones that are able to, you know, you can control that part of it as a local government. And, and this whole issue of control is what the real big problem is overall anyway. The more you control a business, the more you control someone's life, the less likely they're going to be able to be a productive entity or a productive person or business in that community. And for whatever reason it is, it seems like government seems to want to control everything in someone's life, someone's business, even though they probably never run a business, let alone the type of business or industry those individuals are in. So I think the highlight of this, and one of the things that John and I are talking about, is that when you're looking at local control, that everyone understands that, but everyone seems to think that they're a state when they're at the city level, municipal level, or the county level, and they're not. The federal government hands those responsibilities down to the state. So I'll turn it back over to the moderator, but thanks for inviting me today.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please signal now by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, it is star 1 to ask your questions at this time. And we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Again, it is star 1 to ask your questions at this time. And we'll take our first question from Greg Osman.
Hey, gang, and thanks for joining us, John and Sal. I appreciate what you said, and it's rather interesting to hear this view. But and Sal, you were when you spoke of preemption, you focused primarily on a regulatory view. And my question revolves around the notion of local taxation, something I think John has experience with in Virginia. I work for Reynolds American, so we sell tobacco products, and in Virginia they have local taxation of cigarettes, and they each. Many jurisdictions have their own tax rates. So my question is, how do you, John, and Sal both feel about the notion of taxation at the local level versus regulation?
Well, let me go ahead and start off on that. On both levels, It depends on what it is. So on the question of taxation, Arizona has basically a list of things that the local governments can tax that then allows the local governments to set up their own tax on that. For example, let's say milk or food products. Some cities tax food and others don't. Phoenix, you know, luckily I got that killed at the city of Phoenix. We took that off. But some cities still can tax food products up to a certain amount. Not up to a certain amount. They can tax as much as they want, quite frankly. But we set in place what those things can be taxed, what can and cannot be taxed. When you're looking at the regulatory end, I think a lot of it also depends on that as well. So, you know, one of the things I'm a big fan of, obviously, fairly libertarian-based, is that, I believe the regulations ought to be statewide as well. Because if you look at it, those areas, a business owner all of a sudden ends up, let's say you have certain health requirements, okay, in Arizona, the counties handle that, which is pretty good because they cover a large area. You've got multiple cities that come under these counties. If every city had to regulate that, again, you run into the same problem that, you know, you talk about with when it comes to, you know, uniformity. So one business owner on one side of the street would fit under a certain level of requirements, and then another business owner would fit under another. It'd become unwieldy at that point. So many of these, especially when they deal with health and safety deals with our codes. Most cities generally, as a rule, adopt the same codes when it comes to building. If every city created their own code, you'd never get anything done. So uniformity is critical if you're going to be successful. And if we're competing in this national economy, actually it's an international economy, we cannot get into the point where some cities become so overburdened on others and some local governments become overburdened, you're never going to be able to compete in this world economy, in this global market that we're in. So from my end, I think that the state ought to and should mandate down, if they're going to mandate, determine, I shouldn't even use the word mandate, I'm not a big fan of that, but they should be able to determine what those rules are and everybody come together as to what those rules are. And then the local governments can then hire the individuals to enforce those rules. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
It makes sense, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I would say for Virginia, you know, looking at our tobacco taxes, you know, for me, if the state wants to preempt us and collect all the tobacco taxes and then reimburse it back or however they want to do it, for me, I just yield to what the state wants to do in that regard. There are certain taxes that we generate a lot of revenue off of. Tobacco taxes in our jurisdiction in particular is not one of them. And so, you know, for a smaller tax like that, it just seems a little over the top to get that kind of you know, taxation authority to local governments who will, you know, who'll seize on the opportunity to jack up that particular tax in favor of, you know, offsetting other taxes maybe for friends who are, you know, in business or have other allegiances or connections to other tax bases. So, you know, for me, for our local governments, it seems to me that the tobacco tax in particular, which is I'm glad you brought that up, is one that, you know, definitely the state could take care of much better than us on the local level.
Thank you, guys.
A reminder again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, simply press star 1, and we'll go next to Brandon Verveldi.
Hi, everyone. Brandon Verveldi from the Asian American Hotel Owners Association. I had a question about how do you see technology and the Internet changing, I guess, kind of going from a local control to state control to nation to globally and how the economy is changing with that. How do you see that affecting local preemption?
Would you like me to start on that one, John, or your call?
Go ahead.
I don't mind. You've got it. Actually, that's an incredible question. because if you want to be able to compete in this global economy, if you want to be able to look at the Internet, especially if we're getting into the Internet taxation, which is really what we've moved to, right? A lot of states have made that determination that that's what they're going to go into. You have to have uniformity in that case. So could you imagine how unwieldy it would be to be able to be someone from, let's say you're calling from Honduras and you want to book a room in your hotel, and to be able to not be able to do that knowing that there are different sets of rules. Every hotel entity would have to live under a different set of rules. It would just be unwieldy again. So you have to have levels of uniformity so that people can easily understand what the rules are when they come into that state. So you'll never be able to create a taxing mechanism for Amazon if you don't have uniformity. You'll never be able to do that for these groups or these businesses that work online. It'll just never happen. So you've got to have uniformity across the board, and at least at the very least in the state when it comes to taxation.
And I would add, too, I mean, we're starting to see some of this take place with technology in particular, and how do you handle regulations on the local level for industries such as Uber or like Airbnb and short-term housing rentals? The other aspect of that, too, is there was recently a news story out of Alabama of people who are starting to build homes with new technology off the grid in urban environments. And again, you know, a lot of these things, the local government is behind the eight ball in regards to how to handle with the advancement of technology. And so a lot of times there needs to be that uniformity in how to handle these issues because the local governments in a lot of cases do not have the staff or the resources to keep pace with it. So, you know, there definitely is a need for that, I think, on some of these newer technologies and the things that we're starting to see now pop up in the local government.
Yeah, I think John brings up a really good point, is that everyone would expect at that point to be able to say that every city would have to have, every local government would have to have an expert in that area. It just wouldn't work. It's always better to be able to pool certain types of resources, and that's one of the areas that you would have to do that in if you're going to be successful.
Thank you, guys.
And a reminder again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, it's star one. That's star one for your questions. And with no further questions in the queue, I'd like to turn the call back over to John Russell, Director of ACE, for additional or closing remarks.
I want to thank everyone for joining us today. This was our first virtual town hall meeting. We plan to do several others in the near future. Just wanted to also let you and remind you that our annual meeting is coming up in Indianapolis on July 27th through the 29th, and I hope you're able to join us for that as we dive into some of these regulatory issues and start developing model policy. Again, thank you for joining us. Sal, thank you so much for being a part of this. Really appreciate your time.
And thank you, John. This is Sal. Chris and Molly, thank you for inviting us and those of you that are on the line. This is an interesting struggle because it depends on each state. You know, like John was talking earlier, the state of Virginia has clearly defined areas that it sees. You know, Arizona, on the other hand, when it comes to certain levels of taxation, it does. But it doesn't have it as clearly defined when it comes to, for instance, cities being able to charge their own local, you know, when it comes to wages. Now, the governor passed that, taking that, you know, saying that this is really a state issue. This is something that the state ought to be involved in. But not all states are there. So you're going to see more and more of this. And then the real debate needs to be is how much should be preempted and allowed at the local level. And what areas should uniformity be in place? You know, from my end of it, at the very least, I think that uniformity, if you're going to be successful as a state, as a community, and you want people to be successful, you want people to do really well, actually, you're going to have an incredible amount of uniformity across the board so that the rules are all the same. You don't want to have to be able to cross the street and have a situation where you come under a whole new set of rules, carry a new set of books. It becomes unwieldy as a business owner, and it becomes unwieldy as a citizen as well. So I do appreciate the fact I was invited here today and look forward to the next one.
Thank you much, Sal, and thank you, everyone, for being a part of this today. Molly, thank you very much, and we'll call in a day. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this concludes today's presentation. Thank you all for your participation.